welcome Leah Purcell to the Picture House podcast, and congratulations on your truly remarkable film, The Drover's Wife, which you wrote, directed and starred in.
Welcome. And co-produced and did my own fight stunts. There you go.
Oh, amazing. I was going to say, was there anything that you actually didn't do? Because you're so such a filmic polymath. You know, is there anything that you didn't get involved in?
No. You know, I did, but look, I am a collaborator, and you do have to, you know, I had amazing crew, and every now and then I did allow them to be excellent and show me their expertise. So no, I know when to step up and I know when to pull back. So
I love watching my Joe cantering across the flats. Sun setting behind him, children running to greet him. Waving his hat with joy on seeing them. He's been away 3 months.
Mrs. Joe Johnson, I'm worried about her. She's alone.
Molly Johnson grew up out here. She knows the way.
I'm just a drover's wife. But cross me and I'll kill you. I'll shoot you where you stand and I'll bury you where you fall.
I want to go back to the beginning, because you have had a lifelong relationship with this story. Your mother read you the Henry Lawson original when you were little. Tell me about how you felt about it then. And I'm interested for when you started to see it for what it was omitting, and then what made you want to adapt it.
Yeah, well, as a five-year-old little girl, my mum would read or recite the story to me, because I was a terrible sleeper, and I'd always go, mum, tell me that story. So away she'd go. And there's the very famous last line of, Ma, I won't never go a droving. I would jump up in bed and I'd act it out, and she'd go, kid, go to sleep. Now, I knew I was five because here's the original book. There's the book. So it had this red cover. And that's me writing Dick, Dora, Nip. And this is my grade one reader. So I was 5 years old. And my mum said, if you must write in the book, write on the blank pages. It was the first time I used my imagination as a child, I think, and put myself in the story. So I saw myself as that little boy, because there was no father figure in my life. My mum's Aboriginal and my white daddy wasn't around. So it was me and my mum. I am the youngest of seven, but the others are a lot older than me, and they had left home and married and working away. So it was just me and my mum. We had a combustion stove. We had a wood heap. She taught me how to stack a wood heap so it wasn't a holler, so the snake wouldn't get under. And that's words from Henry Lawson's original short story. And, of course, she was also a drover herself in her younger days, because her father was a drover. And just in the last, gosh, maybe 3 years, we found this family photo of his mother. And she's 15 and she's a drover in Winton in Queensland, Australia. Amazing. So this was a rare photo that not a lot of the family members had seen. And because I always wondered why we had a love and a passion for horses, because my mum came from a family of seven girls and they were all horsewomen and could all ride. And we grew up, I think the last time I sat on a horse was when I was 15, and then I did some training for the film, but they pulled stumps on me at the last minute and said I wasn't allowed to ride. But I got up to my trot in the rehearsal process. But maybe it was the ancestors also saying, Leah, you can't do everything, let your stunt double do something. And because it rained for about a month and I couldn't get out to have my final lessons, so I was happy to, you know, give over as well. So yeah, that's why it connected to me. And when I was a child, like, my mum passed away before I could ask her why Henry Lawson. But she liked to read. I don't know if that book was gifted to her or she bought it or she found it. But when she passed away, that was the one thing I took of hers in the house. I had just turned 18 in August. I had my daughter in September and she died in October. So, and I was in a domestic violence situation, far too young to be dealing with that, but I was. And that was that I had my daughter on my hip and that little book in my bag, and I got out of there. And at that time, I wasn't going, I'm going to make a movie one day. No. I was just worried about where I was going to sleep and what was my next meal. So it was, I don't know, and it stuck with me for 47 years. It wasn't until, and then I did Lantana, which was a film here directed by the amazing and wonderful Ray Lawrence. And we were up in Jindabyne, up in the country of the Snowy Mountains. We have a Snowy Mountains here in Australia. And on my days off, I'd go, wow, this landscape is amazing. We just don't utilise it enough in our country, in our films, in our TV. And so we went up to the highest point, which is Mount Kosciuszko, and had a moment because it's amazing. And then I yelled out, I'm coming back and I'm going to do something. And I think it's going to be The Drover's Wife. And I think I'm going to be in it. And it echoed around the mountain range. And then 2019, I'm on literally on the opposite range singing out Action and Cut. So you got to be careful what you put out there.
Absolutely. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
And while you were, you know, having this relationship with the story, obviously you're living your life. And as, you know, I can look back on the fairy tales of my childhood and go, oh my God, women were this shallow and men were allowed to be this incredible things. And, you know, like, so when did you start to see it for what it omitted, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I guess I didn't start to see what it omitted in the early stages, but I became very aware of the Indigenous plight when I was 7 years old and watched Roots, the American show. And my mother was crying and I said, why are you crying? And she said, this sort of treatment happened to herself, happened to her mother. My grandmother was part of the Stolen Generations. And in the movie, there's a scene with a piece of paper that gets thrown into the fire. And I hope my audience that might not know what that means does some research and find out, because that you could stop the movie on that frame and there's a whole nother movie underneath its understanding. So I became aware of that and quite a little activist when I was quite young. In grade 9, I challenged the teacher when she taught us about Captain Cook and was told to sit in the back of the class and be quiet. But when I got to The Drover's Wife, when I sat down to write the first draft, I said to my partner, Bain Stewart, who's we're partner in life and business and he's the lead producer on the film, I said, I'm not going to read it, the book. I'm going to sit down and try to remember what my mum told me and what I can recall. And away I went, 7 days for Act One. It started out as a play first.
Yes.
There's the play. It started out as a play. But 5 days for Act One, 2 days for Act Two. And I said, look, it's probably crap, but go away and read it. And while you're reading that, I'm going to reread the story. And the first thing I did, look, I was very aware of how Henry Lawson stereotypically wrote about the black man, the lazy black man. And that's being done for time and time again. So I was aware of that as I got older and I remember rereading the story or my mother, you know, reading it. But it wasn't until I reread it after I'd done the first draft on the play that I walked back in and I went, oh my gosh, Henry Lawson did not give The Drover's Wife a name. Yeah. And I said, well, I am. And I guess, and then away I went. And also, Bain said, it's a great beginning. We're onto something here. I think we can see a film in it. And I said, that's great. And I do want to get there because I see that too. But I shied away from the domestic violence. I shied away from a few things, just trying to come, because I do touch on those issues a lot within my work. But it just didn't feel truthful to who I am as a woman, as a mother, as a grandmother, as a writer, as an activist. And Bain said, because his mum's Aboriginal as well, he said, it's us as Aboriginal people, if we can't tell our stories truthfully, then who's going to? And that made me then rush home and get my great-grandfather's diary. So this is my great-grandfather. This was written by white superiors of the time. And this is 1891, or when he was younger, but there's a bit of the story that I used for Yarrika, who's in the film. So Yarika, when you go and see the film, is loosely based on this man right here. So I went back and opened this diary up, this thing that the Stockman says to Yarika, and they, it's almost word verbatim from that. And I really wanted to go back and look at our history and be the truth teller, because it's so important that we be Indigenous people are our keepers of our stories and the truth tellers. And it's about taking our, looking at our past. You either, you know, take an acceptance of this is what happened, because if anyone denies me that story, then I don't exist. But I do, because my family spoke about it. And that came from one of our non-Indigenous family members, an in-law, that actually went in and said that they were writing a thesis on something so they could actually get access to those files. Because in this country, maybe 10 years ago, I couldn't go in and get those archive files of Indigenous stories because of the massacres, because these superiors of the time were writing very truthfully. So for me, I became, as I went back, I became very aware of what Henry had written and what I needed to write and to put to the forefront the gender inequality of the time, the brutality of the time, and the racism of the time. But in amongst all of that, there's I hope people see it as a great drama of a woman. It's mother's love. It's about surviving, and there's hope. And that's my Trojan horse, I guess, is the Henry Lawson story. But then Leah Purcell comes in with the undercurrent of this amazing river, and there's all these layers to this film. There's frames that you could stop on, and there's depth and layer and another film within it, which I hope triggers conversation for my audience watching it.
Absolutely. I cannot stress how multi-nuanced every frame is, and you can feel the care that's gone into every word and every character.
Thank you for saying that. It's amazing. That's what I want people to hopefully see and grasp and hear.
Yes, because, and that is such a different perspective. So we've seen the Western through this letterbox of the male white gaze forever, you know, and your perspective has just burst the door open to see it from 360, you know. And I wonder, like, this sort of repositioning of perspective, and especially on such a sort of iconic story, you know, were you prepared that you might be a little not well received, because it has just been so acclaimed? I mean, what a wonderful reception to your play. And I don't know quite how the film's been received, but it must have been quite frightening to take on such an iconic thing. And then, you know, what were you thinking?
Yes and no. Yes and no, I'm very cheeky. I'm very cheeky in a good way, where I'm afraid of everything, but afraid of nothing. And I think but I'm also very respectful, and I'm very spiritual. Yeah. So I actually, in the process of writing and so forth, I actually sent a prayer to Henry Lawson's mother, Louise Lawson. And Louise Lawson is also based on Louisa Clintoff, Louisa Clintoff is based on Louisa Lawson. So there's a nod to Henry's mother. And I said to her, I know I'm messing with your son's story, but you're in the film, so don't worry. And I'm pushing, because she was all about pushing. She was a suffragette. She pushed battered women, domestic violence, temperance. And she was before her times. This is the 1850s or even earlier. She was the first person to publish one of Henry's poems in her journal. And it was called The Dawn. So I gave respect back. And I felt good about doing that. And then in the process of the play, when we were doing rehearsals, I once again sent a prayer out to Henry Lawson. And I said, Mr. Lawson, I'm messing with your words. Speak now, forever hold your peace. So I go to work. I'm in the rehearsal process, big day. I'm tired by the end of the day. And I'm about to leave. And on the board, I didn't see who did it, but someone stuck a quote at eye level as you left the room. And I turned around and I said, who did this? And everyone went quiet. And I said, no, I'm serious. Who did this? And my amazing and legendary wardrobe designer went, oh, I didn't, Tess Schofield. She went, I did. And I said, thank you. I said, I know this sounds quirky or kooky, but I sent a prayer out to Henry Lawson this morning, and this is my reply, and I'd love to read it. Yeah. Unfortunately, I forgot to get the date of when this quote was actually said, but this was my answer, and I knew that I was okay to do what I was doing with Henry's work. And this is a quote from Henry Lawson. "It is quite time that our children were taught a little more about their country for shame's sake." Now, you can do with that as you want, but for me, that's Henry Lawson saying, "You go, girl."
Oh my goodness, my arms have just gone.
Yeah. That's so amazing. You know. Yeah, I know. And look, of course, you worry. As I said, I'm a respectful person. But I knew that, yes, I was diving in to change it, but I wasn't doing it out of ego, and I wasn't doing it to disrespect what he had done. Because around his time, and I forgot the name of the artist, reporter, some people actually tried to report on the plight of the Aboriginal people back in those days, and they would be run out of town. They would be run out of the state. One man was ran out of the state. And look, and you know, that might have been Henry's intention to put more in, and it may not have been. It might have been how he saw the world, and that was his viewpoint. And that's okay too, because it was waiting for me to come along and breathe life into those issues that are now at the forefront in what we're living with today. They're very relevant today as what they were in the 1800s. And look, I can't please everyone, Flick. So there's going to be lovers, there's going to be haters. But if I've emotionally stimulated them, if I've intellectually stimulated them, and I created a bait around this film, then I've done my work as an artist. My work has spoken, and it's challenged.
Yes, and it's almost like, without giving anything away, the women in the film, especially Louisa, she probably knew that she was just planting a seed, that she wasn't going to be able, there was only so much that she could do.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And, you know, and I also paid homage to the non-Indigenous women that have helped me through my career or have been there, you know, also the non-Indigenous members in our family that have been great supporters. But I love that scene between Molly and Louisa, without giving too much away.
Yeah.
But I also like that it was also about Molly sort of saying, "You've got to listen outside, you know, women have to listen to other women," you know, if you're not, because, you know, there are different levels within, you know, feminism and what a feminist is. And sometimes I think the First Nation women aren't given the opportunity to be at the forefront of the movement, to give their voice to their stories. And that's where we need the other women in that movement to be silenced, but there to support and prop and shoulder, you know? And that's, I think, that's when we're all working together.
Yes. And that was another lovely new perspective, in a way, from the Western. You always have women pitted against each other, and, you know, just to have that fabulous female support. So let's talk about Molly Johnson. Oh my goodness, what an amazing character. So who is she to you, and how has she evolved over the years? Is she part archetype? Is she very real? And, you know, she is you, she is ancestral. Yeah. Tell me all about Molly.
Yeah, well, Molly, I guess, Molly also is a paying homage to my mother. As I said, you know, when I was a young girl, the drover's wife, I could see her. You know, she was my mother, she was my father. There's also the strength of my grandmother in her. You know, once I learned about that photo, I went, well, my great-grandmother's in there on my grandfather's side as well. You know, I pride myself in the roles that I play, and I always draw upon family members, aunties, other women that I look up to, and the women on the land as well. You know, to have a representation, and for someone to say, "Leah, you got what it was to be a woman from the land. You know, you've given us a woman that we can look up to, or we can not so much look up to, but she gets us." And I go, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't got an 18-inch waist in a boned corset that, like, you know, all these crazy images that we're so used to seeing of Western women in Westerns. you know.
Yeah, she's real, you know. She's like, I don't want to give too much away, but you know, how many times can a woman, ooze her fluids in a film, you know, and it means something. And you know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to put our women's issues up there. I wanted, you know, that stuff is natural and it's beautiful and it's nurturing and it's us. So I just wanted to really empower the woman. We have a hero here in Australia called Ned Kelly. He's an outlaw. I'm sure you've heard of him. Well, I reckon we need to knock him off his pedestal and put the new heroine up there, and that's Molly Johnson.
Definitely. Yeah, I wonder, like, maybe the rifle would be, I mean, I suppose the gun isn't the greatest image, but she's such a crack shot, and I love that about her, you know, that the description that the priest gave about her, oh, you don't need to worry about Molly.
No, she's a crack shot,
right? Yeah, she's fine. And clearly one of the things about her hard scrabble life and what it couldn't take away from her was her devotion to her children, and I loved the character of Danny. I would say he was a boy that knew he was deeply loved and could be really sweetly himself, you know, in a way that you never see in Westerns. Boys are always beaten within an inch of themselves and having to be not themselves. And he was just so, like I said, so tender and beautifully and sensitively played by Malachi. Sorry, can you say his name again?
Malachi.
Yeah,
Malachi Dower Roberts.
Malachi Dower Roberts. Can you tell me about capturing and portraying Danny?
Yeah, well, Danny is Malachi. Malachi himself is a young man now. He's had a growth spurt since the movie, but he is a beautiful old soul. He's got a little sister, and it's funny, you know, you watch them do the audition, but it's when he went back to his mother and his little sister and how caring, how nurturing, how considerate he was. And I said, this kid's got it all. He's an old soul. He's street smart, you know. He's from a suburb here in Sydney, Redfern, a big Aboriginal community. So he's wise beyond his years. And he was just right. And he was eager to be in the film and he just got it. And I didn't have to say much, you know, he knew Danny. And you're so right. It is about a mother's love. He is his mother's protector. He has seen so much, as you learn through the film. And I think what he lives through, it's either going to make him one of the men that will follow the lead of those that have gone before him and have been wrong, or he's going to make the change and be someone better. Mm. And I think also that the influence from Yarika really, really gets to him and he understands. Yeah. So I love that relationship between them two. And, yeah, and Malachi, played that role so beautifully. And as I said, all of those kids were amazing. They're all of Aboriginal descent. They're all Indigenous. So the Zammit boys, the two younger brothers, they were literal brothers because I knew I'd get that biffo really clean on the and the care as well. And Amalia Olsen from Elizabeth in South Australia is the young daughter. And they worked so hard. Like, there's rules in Australia, you only allowed them for four hours on set. And I literally had to kick them off and they would get angry at me, but we want to stay. And I go, I need you tomorrow, so you've got to go home and come back. So
and obviously his wonderful connection with Yadika, as you've just mentioned, and you know, from observing my own children, you know, when they really connect with an adult who understands, and that full body storytelling, I just loved how you captured that, absolutely, because it's so easy to get wrong with children how they respond to an adult and what it is that makes them respond to an adult. And you nailed it, you know, that trust that he was able to have in Yadika, and Yadika understanding that he wasn't quite ready for the spear at that particular moment, you know, and just, oh, it was just a joy.
But, yeah, that came back to Rob Collins as well. Rob is a father. He's got two children. He's got three stepchildren. So he's a father. And he's gentle. He's a happily married man. He adores his wife. He's always talking about his children. And when we went through the process of auditioning, he didn't have to audition. I was watching Rob over the years because I first worked with him when he was a mature student at NIDA. And when he first came out, I directed him in his first TV show. So to watch him grow as an actor, to know him, you know, how his family life, it was important. And my direction to them was just be in the moment. And as you would connect to someone, you know, I just want you to be in it. And in Indigenous culture, when a child takes to you, they see your spirit, they see your good soul. So when a child takes to you, they see your goodness.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and Rob Collins, the words that came to me were fierce grace. You know, he played him just perfectly. And I can see we're going to run out of time soon. I've got so many questions. So Louisa, played brilliantly by Jessica de Guau.
No, De Guau. Jessica De Guau.
And yeah. Was she in the original book? Was her character actually in the Henry Lawson?
No. The Klintoffs I've made up. So they weren't in the play, but I made them for the book and the film because, well, the film first, I said, how am I going to get my audience to come with me on this journey? So to bring newcomers, because they're from London, they're here to run the town, or Nate Klintoff is ex-sergeant in the army, and they come to run the town. So I thought that's a great way to, and also for my non-Indigenous audience to come through to Molly and be safe in the space. So no, she wasn't in the original.
Yes, because I just thought, you know, but now that you've given me a bit of perspective on Henry's mother, you know, because the suffragette movement would have started about 1880, I think, in the UK. So it makes sense that it's happening, that there's a woman from London coming over. And it was just, you just don't see that in a Western perspective, you know, that.
Yes, and she had dreams and aspirations and a political viewpoint as well. So,
yeah. And tell me about casting Jessica. She was fabulous.
Yeah, well, Jess was in London. Was she between London and Sydney or Australia? And she heard about it. She read the play and was crying and said to her agent, track down Leah Purcell as soon as you can. And, of course, her name came across the desk. There's a list, you know, that the distributors look at, other producers. And I would drive them all crazy because I'd say the right person will come. And they said, time waits for no one, Leah. Pick someone. And I said, no. And I'm glad I waited because Jess finally got in contact and went, I love this role. Can we please meet? And we went and had a meal. And it was beautiful. She wasn't going, oh, I love your screenplay. You know, it's great. Although she said that. But we actually sat down and was talking politics. And it was about her understanding of all the undercurrent issues in the film. And I went, you're a smart woman, as well as very talented and very beautiful. And I think you'd be, and you know, they had to be willing to play a support lead role. They had to be willing to have a writer, actor, director, co-producer in their face every day. And that was me. And she said, Leah, and I said, because you can walk away now, because that's what I'm doing. And she said, I'm running to you with my arms open. I want to be in this film. And it was the same with Sam Reed, who played Nate Klintoff. You know, same again, you know, I actually was aware of Sam and to the movie Belle that he done in the UK. He done spent some time over there as well. And once again, when we sat down to speak, it was more about his politics and what he understood of the undercurrent. And they loved that. Both of them loved the intelligence of the film. You know, it wasn't just a surface story. And then Sam said, Leah, you might not, he said, I want to be truthful to you. He said, you might not cast me once you hear this. And I went, oh, okay. All right, what's up? And he said, well, I know you want Nate Klintoff to be the stranger to this land and come with fresh eyes. He goes, but I live in Jindabyne. So he lived in the snowy mountains. And I said, mate, that's just a blessing. I said, you got the job. It's yours. It was meant to be. If that's, you know, if that's what the country you call home, then so you'll see a scene where he rides the horse down and there's this great all the mountain ranges in front of him. Well, when we were shooting that, he said, Leah, see that third range over? And I said, yes. He said, that's where I live. And I went, oh, wow. So it was, they were meant to be, and they were perfect. The first 2 weeks, I didn't act, I just directed so we could get the rhythm and get timing and get the crew all working. And when they do a scene in a bedroom, and myself and Bane were sitting there, well, he was over with his monitor, and when it finished, it was like, wow, this is a film. And he looks over at me and he goes, they just said your words. He said, that was on another level. And it was like we're two kids in a lolly shop, and I went, wow, that's really, really cool. It was amazing. They were amazing.
Oh, Leah, we've nearly got to finish, but I must ask you about the support that you've had for, I mean, I know you've been singing the praises of the Australian film industry, Screen Australia, and even though this is your baby and your project, you've had such support. Can you tell me a bit about, what you've received from people and,
Well, you know, as I said, Bane Stewart is my partner and in life. He was phenomenal to have on set. He's a producer. The hardest thing, I guess, is finding money, finances. There was a gap and he raised $1.5 million, you know, with philanthropic investment. And so he was amazing as well. I worked with people said, how did you manage to do all of that and get it done? And I said, well, it's been in the pipelines for nearly 20 years that one day I'm going to do my first debut feature film. So my DOP was the first DOP on my short film. So we've been working together for 20 years. He's done all of my shorts and we've worked on TV together. My first AD and my script supervisor, continuity on set, I've worked with them for 10 years in television. Who else was there? And then Tess Schofield was also a part of the team on the play, and two of the actors that played Robert Parson, you'll meet them, and the Trooper Leslie, those two gentlemen were also in the play. So I just wanted to bring people around where I knew that I didn't have to have the same conversation with, and they had my back. And they were there to share those stories or come at it from a different angle. And I'm a big collaborator. I'm not afraid to go on days, you know what, I don't know if this is working. I think I got that wrong, that shot list wrong. Let's go back. But having those people know how I work made all the jobs that I had to do that much easier. You know, of course, there were days where I was extremely exhausted, but I set my challenge. I've been 30 years in the industry. I set myself that challenge to act, direct, and write and be a co-producer. I'm a woman, of course, I'm going to co-produce. but I set that challenge. So I feared it all, but I feared nothing because I had goals that I had to reach and I just had to do it. I couldn't turn away. Too many people were relying on me, and we had great, as I said, private investment of those people knowing my career, wanting to support my voice and what I had to do in my first film. And we were very fortunate to have two of them that were premium investors that gave a fair chunk of the money, which allowed other people to say, well, if they trust Leah and her vision and she can do all these jobs, then we're going to come on board. And so I feel very fortunate, but in also saying that, I've worked very, very hard for 30 years in this industry with not much help. I've had to do it on my back, you know. I have to pay to get the rent and food on the table. I've got to go out and do acting gigs, you know. But in the last 5 years, I've had wonderful support because I've proven myself, I guess. Yeah. So I get that as well. You've got to prove yourself. And now I think there's a door. They're not opening it for me quite just yet, but at least there's a door for me to walk through now, and I'm not jumping through a window or hijacking someone in a bank line saying, listen to my ideas, which you do in this country.
Exactly. Oh, Leah, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed The Drover's Wife, and I wish you every success with this brilliant film.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it opening in the UK. We've done some festivals. We've had great feedback. It world premiere at South by Southwest in Texas. We've had great receivings. I'm not sure when this podcast play, but it just opened, the film opened today in Australia on the 5th of May. And I went to see my own movie. I bought a ticket and a choc top, and I paid for someone's ticket who came back. behind me and said, I'll have one for Drover's wife. And I said, can I buy that for you? She thought I was a weirdo. I said, I'm the director and the actor in it. And she got chuffed, you know. So, you know, it's about supporting Australian cinema. It's about supporting Australian drama. So I'm very excited. And so far, touch wood, everyone has really been very supportive behind the film. It's Mother's Day weekend in Australia here this weekend, so I hope it does well at the box office, because that's what you need, you know, that I'm backable for my next one.
Yes, exactly. I definitely want to hear more from you, and would love to have you back on the podcast and for your next project, definitely.
Oh, I would love to come back, but thank you so much for your kind words. It's great when you know, you got it, and that's awesome.
I can't tell you how much I got it. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very powerful piece of filmmaking.
Thank you very much.